Blog Talk Radio.
Hear ye! Hear ye! The court's in session! The court's in session! Now, here come the judge! Here come the judge!
Here come the judge!
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to our stage tonight, because Devin is busy, y'all. Listen, he has tried everything he possibly could to cause technical difficulties tonight in the show. That means only one thing, that whatever Judge Joe Brown was coming with tonight, the devil did not want it on the air, and we are not having it. So we are still behind the scenes doing everything we can to work out some technical difficulties, trying to reach Blog Talk Radio and everything else. Yes, Joe Brown is on the line. He's standing by, and he ain't quitting, and we aren't either. So listen, we apologize for everybody who has anticipated this show, as I have and Christopher has. We want to hear what the judge has to say, and he is ready to say it. And so listen, we ask that you please have patience with us tonight. We are going to do everything we can, and we are going to exhaust every bit of that 120 minutes trying to get on this show tonight. And so please stand by as we try to work out all technical difficulties. But Judge Jill Brown is on the line. He is ready to talk, and we are ready to listen. So I ask you to get you some popcorn and something cold to drink. Sit back and just kind of have us down low and listen, because we're going to get into this phone line sometime away. Before the 2 hours is up. So we're sweating a little bit over here, but we ain't quitting. So please stand by as we try to work out the difficulties, okay? Thank you for your patience. Good evening, Judge Brown. Good evening, Judge Brown. Hello? 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 Good evening, Judge Brown. Good evening. Good evening, Judge Brown.
Hello? Trying to answer.
Good evening.
Hi there.
Hello, how are you?
Can you hear me?
We can hear you.
Yes, sir.
Oh, okay. Now you have reception. Good.
Listen, the devil is a lie. He didn't know who he was fooling with tonight. Christopher, you're going to have to figure out how to tap in. I had to call Judge Brown on my personal phone to get him in here. But listen, I was determined 120 minutes was not going to go by before we got the judge on the line. So it is what it is. Christopher's going to be trying to get in, y'all, through the other phone system, but we have to do something creative tonight because the judge is here. He's ready to talk, and we're ready to listen. So listen. Again, I'm going to tell you, click, tag, and share. Tell somebody the Judge Brown is on the air. Kerry made it happen, and he's ready to talk, and we're ready to listen. We're going to cover a myriad of topics tonight, y'all, but we're going to let the judges jump in where he wants to jump in tonight because we've lost almost 30 minutes or better of the show. So, listen, y'all, he's a man who needs no introduction. Everybody knows who Judge Brown is. So tonight, good evening, Judge Brown, and welcome to the stage.
Well, good evening. I'm glad we got in, but I've been having this problem quite frequently recently. Seems I might have some things people don't want to hear.
Okay. Or something. Well, listen, whatever you want to talk about tonight, you know, just jump in because we've lost so many minutes already. Just jump in and tell us whatever you want to talk to us about tonight.
Well, you know, my favorite topic is Band Up. We need that.
Okay.
We've gotten kind of soft. Being a man is interesting. You have to prepare yourself for manhood. That means you have to be reasonably strong physically. You have to be very strong mentally. You have to prepare yourself. You have to acquire knowledge and information. You should have some sort of skills. You should be able to read, write, do some math, and be able to figure things out. And have put yourself in a state of mind where you're logical, reasonable, rational, analytical, skeptical, and you have character traits like duty, honor, obligation, responsibility, and accountability. You should be prepared to do these things, and if you do, then you can be a man and you can make a difference.
Wow. Well, in many cases, they in many ways feminized the man so that he doesn't want to be a man, that really he wants to take on the woman's role as opposed to being the man in society?
The first time I heard this was 53 years old. It was on UCLA's campus, and they had a panel of feminists who were in front of a large number of people having a discussion on what they wanted. Paramount within their foundational causality was they wanted to destroy the traditional family and manhood because they thought traditional families and marriage made slaves of women. So they didn't like that. They were deep into the anti-war thing, and they had this thing where they thought men were the cause of war, so the way to stop war was to change the way boys were raised to men. So boys should be raised like they were girls so they would learn to emote, to cry, to shout, to let it all hang out instead of trying to be uptight and under self-control. And they set about doing that. They made alliance with the gay crowd, or the homosexual crowd at the time. They made alliances with those who were lesbians. And they had a thing with the problem that we didn't understand, the pedophiles at the time. So they made common cause on the destruction of manhood, traditional families, and on changing the paradigm from a set of things that you were expected to do, duty, honor, obligation, and all that kind of stuff, to do what you want to do, when you want to do it, if you want to do it. And that doesn't work out because it strips people of a purpose. See, if you are a man or you are a woman and you you have a dedication to what that means, then every morning when you get up and you look in the mirror, you have a cause staring you in the face. You don't worry about giving up, because the harsher the adversity, the more committed you become to the cause. So the first cause is manhood, and then people sometimes have the family as the second cause. And then the third level cause is your community, and the next one is your larger community or those things that cause you to be loyal to something, some concept, some idea, some nation, some people, some state. Some interject religion in there and become advocates of a religion. But if you have a cause, you have a purpose in life. And too often what I find these days is you get boys who are old enough to be men, but they've never got out of manhood because they've never gotten a cause or a purpose in life. So they flounder. And they talk about no daylight at the end of their tunnel because, you know, everything's so bad. But they don't realize that they've got a great opportunity to be heroes by taking those people they ought to be responsible for and fighting their way through the end of the tunnel to the end of the tunnel to kill off the fire-breathing Gila monsters that are setting fire to the tunnel. And if they don't make it, to become heroes to the cause. But that's another thing. And what we have now is just a disgusting thing where everybody does what everybody feels like doing and nobody wants to do what they ought to do. Be all you can be rather than be all you ought to be. There's a difference. And if you understand the difference, then when you are what you ought to be, you get intense, real pleasure instead of all the time running around trying to get a high going on or to find something to distract yourself, because nothing's really satisfying, because you are a human animal, and the only thing that is really satisfactory to the human male animal is doing what you're supposed to be doing.
Wow. I think we're all going to have to man up, even the women, with what we got going on right now. Just tell us a little bit about what you think about COVID-19 right now.
I don't presume to tell a woman how to be a woman, but I will note this. A woman can help a man become a man by getting on those males who do not act like men. See, black women are interesting in contrast to white women. White women will tell their men, go out, die for something that's a cause, stand up and be a man. And you listen to some black women and they say, honey, don't do that. It might be dangerous. Or, honey, you shouldn't do that. They might come down on you. In other words, every time the guy gets ready to go do what he ought to do, some woman that he's allied himself with is telling him not to do that. With white women, they tell their men to go forth and slay the dragons, you know. Ours, they say, you might get singed, turn around and go hide someplace. Not all of us, but some of us, because that's the culture that the slave owners imposed upon the black race long time ago. Now, I'm not getting caught up in this white supremacy thing, because that's just adversity. Right now, it's white supremacy and this LGBT queer stuff, okay? We've got two adversaries, LGBT queer, not homosexuals, but LGBT queer. Make no doubt about it. They want to destroy the family. They want to destroy manhood. And those are the things that any people depend upon in order to get it together. You cannot have a war without warriors. You cannot have war without the warriors who are raised in a family. And you cannot have a family if you're trying to destroy the family. If there's no family, you have no warriors to fight a war. So we have to protect the family, and we have to advance it. Go ahead.
Some people are saying that, like, the Black Lives Matter movement is about pretty much the gay community for the most part.
It is. It is. You have to read their mantra, their manifesto, what we believe. Now, they've hidden it because I've been getting on them for 2 months, so they revamped their site, but you can still find it. And if you find it, don't start at the top. It sounds good. Get about halfway through before you can find out what they really are about. In fact, start at the end, scroll all the way through the end, and then work back. You will find the last paragraph doesn't sound bad. The second one is rather peculiar because it talks about people of all ages being leaders, and all age groups should be able to make their determination. That doesn't make sense until you find out that they lifted that word for word from the NAMBLA mantra. NAMBLA is the North American Man Boy Love Association, dedicated to homosexual pedophilic love. They're pedophiles. The FBI has been ragging them out, but BLM has adopted them. Then you go up to the third paragraph from the bottom, and it says, we are a queer-affirming network. And then you find that we must embrace and accept the leadership of our trans brothers and sisters. You will find that if you read the whole thing, it doesn't say a thing about black men, and it doesn't say a thing about black families. In fact, when it talks about family, it says we must destroy the traditional Western nuclear family, which also happens to be the same for the Chinese, Africans, South Americans, Japanese. Anybody in the world has the same nuclear family where you've got mother and father and children in the family, and it may be extended, but they want to destroy that. They also talk about the suppression of heteronormative generated thinking. In other words, the ideas of straight people, they're dedicating themselves to the position of cisgender in the scheme of things. In other words, they are dedicating themselves to the destruction of the place of men in society. I mean, it's just absolutely poisonous. So it's kind of, where are we going with this? And then you get to the one that's really bad, is we must destroy the position of the cisgendered person in all of society. That's men. So in other words, they're talking about their purpose is supposed to be in response to the murder of black men by police. But when you read their manifesto, the whole thing is dedicated to the destruction of the same men and to the families that produce them. So it's a bait and switch thing. And if you get further, they tell you themselves that they are an affiliated and associated organization. No, they are an associated affiliate of LGBTQIA+. And they tell you if you donate to them, the money goes to LGBTQIA+ and also to Act Blue, which is a Democratic Party front organization. And in disclosure for federal purposes, they let you know, but they hide it a bit, who they give money to and how much. So when you pay anything into them, it's used for LGBTQIA or it's used for Act Blue, or it is used to pay the salaries of the four lesbians, one of whom's married to a white wife, and they pay themselves $250,000 a year out of this, and they stole the idea, and what they do is cooperate with LGBTQIA in sending representatives around the world to talk up homosexuality. And the Africans are getting a little bent out of shape about it because they told the U.S. Department of State that they don't play that. But here you have BLM that is pushing this. And you see, it's not a real thing. If you look at these Black Lives Matter demonstrations, if you see 11 people, you see 9 or 10 of them are white. Most of them are ratchet little white cupcakes running around saving the animals. In other words, oh, my God, the colored are getting abused. We must stop animal abuse. Save the polar bear, save the tiger, save the colored. And for $19.95 a month, you can ensure that none of them are chained out in the cold during the winter anymore. and these horrible police don't beat these poor, helpless animals anymore. And the other thing is Black Lives Matter demonstrations really, to me, look like a bunch of little ratchet cakes who've been cabin fevered by COVID-19 restrictions, and they're having a rowdy spring break. That's what it looks like to me.
And Judge Brown, Christopher Vons, I'm Carrie's co-host, and I saw a few things in the chat that came up, and I want to clarify some things just so that because people take things out of context and they think that you're making this up, but I'm responding to them that you're not. And I just want to read real quick directly from the BlackLivesMatter.com website in reference to what you're saying. If you go down like about midway, you're absolutely right. I'm going to read this real quick. It says, "We are guided by the fact that all Black Lives Matter, regardless of actual or perceived sexual identity, gender expression, economic status, ability, disability, religious beliefs or disbeliefs, immigration status or location." Okay, this is where it transitions right into what you just said. "We make space for transgender brothers and sisters to participate and lead." That within itself is not bad. But then when you read on, it says, "We are self-reflexive and do the work required to dismantle cisgender privilege and uplift Black trans folk, especially Black trans women who continue to be disproportionately impacted by trans antagonistic violence." Then it goes on. Last three, "We build a space that affirms Black women and is free from sexism, misogyny, and environments in which men are centered. We practice empathy. We engage comrades with the intent to learn about and connect with their context." Then the last two, "We make our spaces fully participate with their children. We dismantle the patriarchal practice that requires mothers to work double shifts so that they can mother in private, even as they participate in public work. We disrupt the Western prescribed nuclear family structure requirement by supporting each other as extended families and villages that collectively care for one another, especially our children, to the degree that mothers, parents, and children are comfortable. Lastly, we foster a queer affirming
network."
Notice
they didn't say fathers.
No.
They didn't say fathers. Keep going.
Absolutely. "We foster a queer affirming network. When we gather, we do so with the intention of freeing ourselves from the tight grip of heteronormative thinking, or rather the belief that all in the world are heterosexual unless he or she or they disclose otherwise." To me, it is straightforward that what this movement is doing is trying to ride the back of the Black plight, and they have been successful, and a lot of people don't realize it would be one thing if this was a movement and that's what they were doing on their own accord, but they're actually using the Black persona or fight to further their gains, and people cannot distinguish. Most people don't know that, what you just said, Judge Brown.
Oh, they don't. If you want to have something, instead of Black Lives Matter, have BFM, Black Folk Matter, Black Families Matter, Black Fathers Matter, Black Fealty Matters, Black Faith Matters, Black Finance Matters. You know, BFM, Black Folk Matter, not just Black Lives Matter. That's a bait and switch, which the name of the organization ought to be Black Lesbians Matter or Bitch Lesbian Mania is what it stands for.
But how is that going to help us, though, in the long run, Judge Brown? Or are we going to get to the end of the road and we're not going to have anything that we ask for?
We get nothing because, see, we've been voting Democratic for years and years, not always. We used to be staunch Republicans because the Republican Party was chartered in 1851 to free the slaves, and abolition, they called it. So we Black folk used to be historically Republicans. Then when you got to the Depression, people were starving, and Franklin Roosevelt came up with some programs, so Black folks started going that way. When Truman finished it up and backed it up, and signed the order integrating the armed services, and with the executive order 1981, you know, black folk got firmly committed. That kind of got cemented back in 1960 when Kennedy ran, and he made a few phone calls about getting some demonstrators released from jail, whereas Nixon sat on his hands. Well, the Republicans did nothing, and then the Dixiecrats left the Democratic Party in 1968, and everybody since then has been firmly Democratic. But the Democratic Party has delivered nothing to black folk for the last 40 years. But they've delivered a lot to the LGBT queer community. And by the way, queer affirming, which they also say in the Black Lives Matter manifesto, I call it BLM queer, and LGBTQ, the Q stands for queer and questioning, so I call it LGBT queer and BLM queer. They have gotten hold of the Democratic Party, and every time we vote somebody in who's a Democrat, we get nothing, but they get everything. Like this Equality Act thing is the biggest sham going. It was drafted and introduced by John Conyers in 1996 and 97. It went nowhere. So it came back up recently and got tabled again, and then Juicy Jesse Smollett came up with that fake attack in Chicago where police have video from a costume shop of him and his two Nigerian lovers buying that noose in a costume shop Halloween week that he put around his neck. And then Kamala Harris, who I call the fake Negro, and then the House Negro, Cory Booker, took that and tried to change the name of the Equality Act to the Anti-Lynch Bill. So it got revived and it passed the U.S. House of Representatives. Now, that thing says nothing about lynching in it, not one word about it, not one word about black folk. But what it does do is, for the first time, it takes somebody's sexual activity, and that's usually what's reserved for the bedroom, and it makes it something to change the status. There's a dangerous precedent in it. You can call somebody the N-word and nothing happens, but if you call one of them one of the slurs that you put on gayness, then it becomes a crime punishable by imprisonment and fine, which is ridiculous. They have never done that for interference with the rights of black folk. So you also have this thing in there where they start including language along the lines of, when a person engages in sexual activity that his medical or mental condition compels him to do, blah, 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 that should be protected. Well, that's straight out of NAMBLA, North American Man Boy Love Association. So it's pedophilic language. When I used to sentence people for child rape or child molestation and they were pedophiles, I'd get most of that language they use in the Equality Act coming back to me on the reports about this pedophile. So they're trying to legitimate that. So it's a bait and switch thing. And fortunately, it has been bottled up in the U.S. Senate since May, and it doesn't need to get anywhere because it actually deprives black folk, ordinary black folk, of a lot of their status and their rights, and it deprives women of a lot of benefits too. Like, for example, Title VII goes, you cannot discriminate on the basis of race, color, creed, religion, national origin, or sex. But here they so deal with transferring this thing from sex to someone's particular choices under fluid gender that they basically destroy everything women got in there. Like, women have pregnancy periods. They have medical problems that are attributable to female status. And these characters put something in there so if somebody makes the claim, they can sit there and botch all of that up. They put themselves in a situation where all a boy has to do is say a girl, and it becomes a violation of federal law if they don't let him compete against real girls in sports or real women in sports. And it's particularly dangerous when it comes to full contact sports. Some woman's going to get killed fighting one of these boys who is a failed male athlete. Now, a year and a half ago, Texas had the state finals for high school track meets and included women for the first time or the second time. So the first five places in the 100 meters, 200 meters, 400 meters, 1600 meters, 400 meter relay, high jump, broad jump, javelin, discus, and shot put were all won by boys. And wow. Claiming to be a girl doesn't make them a girl. That's insulting the women. But see, that's what this Equality Act will put into place. The other thing is you don't realize it. The debate that they had for the 2 years leading up to 2016 about who gets to piss in the girls' room besides the girls, and Barack Obama issuing an executive order in terms of the distribution of educational funds, which he could do as chief executive, it just looked like he mandated that the trannies, the drag queens, could use the women's bathroom, but that wasn't the extent of it. Let's go to junior high school where your daughter is going to school. Well, according to what he said, all the boys got to do is claim he's a girl, and he gets to shower with the girls and use the girls' locker room. Can you imagine some boy 13 in there naked with his dick hung out, soaked down, wet with some girls who are naked and soaked down? Or how about let's move it to high school? What kind of fool would set that kind of situation up for all of the vicious stuff that's going to go on throughout the high school where everybody's getting to talking about this? And that looks like one of these Revenge of the Nerds things from back in the 70s when the boys would drill a hole in the wall between the boys' locker room and the girls' locker room so they could peep at the girls being naked. See, it's crazy.
Right. Y'all listen. If that voice sounds familiar to you, it is. That is Judge Joe Brown. Listen, he is here for a segment called Here Comes the Judge. And tonight, y'all, this is his courtroom. And Chris and I are just the bailiff. And there are so many topics that we have on the show tonight. And we got a late start due to technical difficulties. And for that, we do apologize. But we're going to make up every single minute of it. Judge, you know what? Can you talk to us a little bit about the protest right now? It's so because of George Floyd.
Okay, the
and
protest,
his
death. Look, I'm in my 70s. I'm not going to lie. I was there for the Watts Riot. Hell, my girlfriend lives three blocks from where the Watts Riot Rocks Uprising started in 1965. Mm-hmm. There were black people, a whole lot of black people. I saw demonstrations where they were not nonviolent demonstration in the registrations in the 60s. None of this down on your knees praying while some redneck's beating you across your head until some other rednecks felt guilty about it. No, we didn't play that. But I see no black people. I'm seeing BLM demonstrations where I'm having to look to see somebody black and they got on a police uniform. I mean, goodness, the news feed that they cherry pick, I don't watch the news. I watch the news feeds that the newsrooms get and they edit out and chop up and give you what they think. And I'm looking at what they put out there, and they are searching to find rare shots with black people in them. Because what I'm seeing is Black Lives Matter demonstrations where there are no black people involved. And then the typical one, out of 10 or 11 people, you got 9 or 10 black folk out of the 11, 9 or 10 white folk out of the 11 people in the demonstration.
But these,
so
but these protests,
not what you think.
But these protests are leading the feds to come in, and this is something I've never seen, where yeah, I think the feds came in Ferguson, but they were never announced as being the feds. But now we're seeing where they're actually calling in the feds, and they're announcing that they're calling in the feds. Are we entering dangerous territory to that?
That's nothing new. That's what the president's supposed to do. That's his job, to restore public order. If you want to see what happened when they got out of line on the other way and they wouldn't let blacks into Little Rock High School in the 50s, Eisenhower nationalized the Arkansas National Guard and also sent in the 101st Airborne and said, to hell with you. This is Whitlaw restore order. This is what's going to happen. When everybody rose up and got to acting crazy in South Central L.A., LBJ nationalized the National Guard. They had 10, 11,000 troops in there. So when you have public disorder, that's what the president's job is. That's nothing new. Back when they had railroad strikes, the president would send in the troops. When they had a labor strike that got out of hand, the president would send in the troops. And in this case, we've got these folk that have been running these cities for decades, and the cities are completely out of hand. And that damn fool mayor in Chicago, what nobody wants to talk about in the press, is this idiot had the damn idea that she could take these federal funds for community development and give it to some damn street gangs. And they used it to buy armaments and to supply. And now what's going on is the money went to some Hispanic street gangs in Chicago, not the black ones. It went to the Hispanic ones, and the Hispanic community leaders are all been out of shape about arming thugs in their communities. So what's been going on is Hispanic gangs have been killing black boys in Chicago, and black gangs have been killing Hispanic boys in Chicago. Damnedest fool thing you ever want to see. They need to send in the feds and bestow order on that place.
But what would happen
there? There ain't black folk out there getting down other than killing and shooting. There's no black folk demonstrating in Chicago. There's a bunch of little ratchet white kids out there.
But won't that put martial law on us all eventually? If that thing gets out of hand, we'll all end up.
Martial law can be called when there is an insurrection. If there is a true insurrection, the Constitution says that the writ of habeas corpus no longer applies. That's a very dangerous situation because right now, if somebody locks somebody up and it's unlawful, any judge that has comparable jurisdiction can hear the petition and say, whoop, no, that's not constitutional. You've got to let them out. But you see, we haven't gotten the martial law. What you're trying to do is stop it from getting there. See, in the 60s, what went on that kind of kept the damper on it was from the very beginning they clamped down. So if you went out there and got the clowning around and demonstrating, you really had to pay a cost. You might get shot, jacked up, locked up, and nobody's putting bond up for you. But you see, right now, everybody's being so nice and understanding, and the police are taking one knee and enjoying prayer sessions with everybody, and they're being reasonable and watching little white kids, little cupcakes, dance around and carrying on, waving Black Lives Matter flags. You see, they need to put order in line, like in Seattle, where they had that police-free zone. Somebody got shot up in there. And now, crazy enough, he's one of the protesters to keep the police out. The fool is suing the police for not responding quick enough when he got shot.
Wow.
That is dumb.
But you know, and I know when martial law comes in, I mean, really, I think we're technically under martial law with COVID-19.
This is a way to keep martial law from happening, because if it gets out of control, then you will get martial law. That's been the rule since the country was around. And remember, these aren't black folk out there rioting. These are white kids.
Okay.
All right?
Okay.
This isn't a race thing, because it's not black folk that are going to be looking at the National Guard. It's white kids.
Mm-hmm.
That is the myth that they're putting out because they're saying Black Lives Matter. But you don't see black people out there.
No.
So you want to prevent them from getting into this. And this thing about wearing masks and stuff with COVID-19, the preamble to all of the American laws for the public health, safety, and welfare. So health, safety, welfare. Those are the preeminent goals of our government. So, of course, you can push those. The wearing of face masks is no different than being required to wear a safety belt. All right?
Right. But see, Judge,
they can do one, they can do the other.
Are they telling us the truth about the numbers, though? Are we being lied to about the causes of death?
In fact, let me tell you this. I will say this. My major at UCLA started out as physics. It wound up being a minor, and I got a political science major. I had another minor, which was vertebrate paleontology. So what I like to do is read the research papers published for peer review. Mm-hmm. If I can synthesize what you're looking at, COVID-19 is not the most lethal disease of modern times, but it is probably one of the most contagious. And the lethality that does exist for it, combined with the numbers, make it the most dangerous disease that humanity has faced since the bubonic plague, Black Death. Now, granted, modern medicine has prevented a lot of deaths because they have ventilators and other things to keep somebody's fever down, intravenous fluids to keep somebody's numbers stable so that everybody doesn't die. But right now, they've got close to 150,000 deaths in the U.S. alone, and that's the highest death rate in the world. They have 4 million confirmed cases, but I'm at high risk because I'm a type 2 diabetic and I'm in my 70s. I couldn't even get a test in my doctor's office when I went in for my regularly scheduled visitation last week. And the doctor's wearing a mask the whole time he's in the office. So the truth of the matter is, from the research papers I've been reading, is that the statistical projections are that only about a tenth of the people who have contacted or contracted the disease ever get tested, because to a great extent they get real sick, but they don't go in and they don't get tested. So if we take that 10 times, that means that about 40 million Americans have contracted the disease. Now, I was particularly concerned about some research that came out of China, and that indicates that those who were early victims of COVID-19 who have recovered, guess what? They don't have immunity to the disease. They can catch it again. Now, you, everybody I'm talking to, has been infected with a beta coronavirus. Four kinds cause the common cold. There is no cure for the common cold, and there is no vaccination that can prevent you from catching the common cold. This is a beta coronavirus. It's just the super edition of the one that causes the common cold. And our problem as a people is that common colds, how often has somebody shown up for work with a fresh box of Kleenex and all kinds of other stuff and coughed and sneezed and blown snot all over the place and got a wastebasket full of snotty tissues by the end of the day, and by the end of the week, half the folk in the office have come down with a cold? Well, that's a beta coronavirus. This is just the souped-up edition. So you catch it the same way you can catch a common cold, except now we find out it's mutated, so it's worse. You don't have to have droplets of spittle or mucus that you come in contact with. You don't have to take your hands after they've been contaminated before you wash them thoroughly and rub your face unconsciously. You can breathe in the mist that people exhale. The moisture in their breath is contaminated. And that's when you see people at a restaurant who work there who have a mask on, but their noses are stuck out. They ain't doing anything. And by the way, the mask isn't for your protection. The mask is the equivalent of putting your hand over your mouth when you cough, sneeze, or belch, so you don't get anybody else infected when you sneeze if you've got a cold.
Well, are you comfortable with
those
masks?
When somebody's got the mask over his mouth, he ain't protecting you. Now, the masks that will protect you are these N95s. They are relatively expensive, and they are definitely hard to breathe through. They've got a KN95, which is good, but it's not like an N95. Now, this myth out there about people are passing out because of carbon monoxide, dioxide port. No, that's not true. People just stop breathing right. You got to use your diaphragm and let your belly stick out a little bit when you breathe. And breathe deeply instead of shallowly. You will not have the problem. And there's not enough carbon dioxide that can build up in that mask to do you any harm. And I've been diving for 55 years, and I've been down way deep, and I've had some regulators that didn't breathe easily, and you got to work a lot harder struggling against a deep current 180 feet down with a lot less air going through your system than you have when you got these masks on. You can handle it. Just stop being a punk and a sissy and breathe deeply. You can do
okay,
it.
Let me ask you this. Are you comfortable with them fast tracking the vaccine, though? I mean, doesn't that sound very rushed to you, the way they're trying to get it to
us? Well,
it?
The point is let me give you the bad news. They have some promising vaccines, but there are none that have been proven, and quite likely they'll never come up with one, just like they have them for the common cold. It, too, is a beta coronavirus. This is the fifth kind of beta coronavirus that infects humans. The technical name is SARS-CoV-2. SARS-CoV-1 caused SARS 18 years ago. SARS-CoV-1A caused MERS, not MRSA, which is a skin affliction, which is Middle Eastern Respiratory Syndrome. SARS-CoV-2 causes COVID-19, which is the disease discovered and analyzed in 2019. This stuff may not be achievable. There are some stuff that's promising, but you see, when you do a field test, you have to test it on many people, and you have to have a control group who gets nothing. You have to have a control group who gets a placebo. In other words, it's a fake pill. And you have to see if there's any correlation that comes out from the people that take it. See, if you have a small sample, it may look like it is a monster and it really works. But it may just be mere coincidence. So you have to have enough people in terms of your numbers to assure that you're actually getting some results. Now, let me give you the bad news. Now, it hasn't been the first wave. What we have seen so far is the football equivalent of the team just ran out of the tunnel, and they're doing exercises before they line up for the first kickoff. They haven't lined up yet. So I'm making a personal prediction that this stuff is really going to start getting bad around November. Now, I hope I'm wrong, but there's no point arguing about it. We'll see one way or the other whether I went off on the deep wrong end or not. But this is going to get bad, and so far we may have had up to or perhaps more than 40 million Americans infected with it, and we've got 150,000 on the clock as having died of it. And by the way, for those of you who talk about it, I don't have to worry about it, I'm young and healthy. Well, guess what? A new strain of it is causing the young and healthy between 15 and 25 to get really jacked up because they have what they call a cytokine storm. What that is your own immune system is very effective, very efficient. But it's so efficient that when it gets activated, it starts attacking your own organs and it kills you. They've also found that toddlers, 2-3 years old to around 6 or 7, can get infected, and they've got a 31% death rate, not the 10% for adults. Now, by the way, 10% is a bitch, too. The Romans used to have a punishment called decimation. In other words, when a unit or a legion acted wrong, didn't act brave enough, they went down 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, you. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, you. And see, that's what they're actually doing. Every 10th person dies who gets it. So that's not necessarily the highest death rate, but more people are getting this than any other disease in a long time. So that 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, that adds up. And then we have the precedent of a much less virulent disease, Spanish flu in 1918. It died down between February and June, and there was a brief hiatus, but then it took off in September of 1918, and after some, about 50,000 deaths by the end of the summer, it took off in between September 1918 and February 1919, killed 18 million Americans.
Yeah.
18 million on a population of 103 million.
Yeah.
Some of this stuff is nothing to play with. And right now, this is a bad thing because of the number of species it infects. We know it came out of bats. And actually, the genetic analysis, from what I've seen, shows that it is a natural thing. And even if it got made in a laboratory, so what? Like Frankenstein's monster, it got out of control once it got loose. But it's in bats. It's in civets, which are a form of weasels that the Chinese like to eat. They think it's a delicacy. It infects minks, which they make fur coats out of. And there's a documented case out of the Netherlands where a worker around the mink farm caught it, and the minks caught it from a feral cat. So that's civets, minks, bats, that's chickens, and we eat a lot of chicken. That's swine, pigs, people eat pork. That's cows, people eat beef. They're domestic dogs, feral dogs, foxes, coyotes, and wolves that have been tested with it. There are domestic cats and feral cats. They've tested lions and tigers who turned up positive for it. They've tested baboons and chimpanzees who tested positive. So, I mean, this is some dangerous stuff.
If you believe it. That's what you hear. If you
not
just tune in.
Let's put it this way. I read the research papers. So research papers are interesting. They are published. They have to list what they did, what their findings are. They have to list who did it. They have to point out the strong points, the questionable points. And these things say we need more information relative to the illegal on such and such and such. And the percentage we found of such and such aspect of it is so on and so forth. And they have to submit it for what they call peer review. So other scientists go over the research that is provided, the conclusions, and they attack it or they support it or they question it or they make exceptions. And everybody puts this together. It's not secret. You can look at it. You can even publish comments yourself about the stuff. So it's out there. So when you look at it, if you know what you're looking at, you say, oh, this is bad. In other words, this is like your doctor getting a lab report back on you and say, we need to talk. You see what I'm saying? In other words, this isn't the newspaper reporting on it or anybody being a crank. These guys are publishing what they did a lot of research on, and other folk are attacking it, and you can read it all, and if you know what you're looking at, you can do the analysis yourself.
Gotcha. Listen, y'all.
So if you know enough about it, you can say, I don't agree with this. This, I think, is wrong, but this, I think, is right. But let's see, what conclusion would I draw when I analyze this?
I agree. Listen, y'all, if you just tuned in, and that voice sounds familiar, it is. It is. That's Judge Jill Brown we got on the line tonight for a segment we're calling Here Comes the Judge. Tonight, Center Stage is his court. And so listen, get on the phone, because it's about to get really good. This last 30 minutes or so, we're going to talk about some stuff everybody's talking about. Nick Cannon, Kanye West, Barack Obama, and the upcoming presidential election. So, y'all, listen, again, click, tag, and share. Tell at least three people Center Stage is on the air with Judge Joe Brown. We're about to talk about Nick Cannon, Kanye West, the upcoming presidential election, and Barack Obama. Well, where should we begin, Judge?
Nick Cannon.
Should we talk about Kanye
Cannon?
West? Oh, Nick Cannon? Let's go. Okay,
Let's
Nick
start
Cannon.
Start with Cannon first.
Okay.
Okay. Mariah Carey's husband. I thought that was one of the most notorious punk outs I've seen in a long time. He can always get himself a real job. See, what he was doing is he has got this kind of philosophy that he's a Jew, that black folk were the original Jews, and the way the thing goes is a quarter of a million years ago, some E.T. aliens landed on the planet and chose some Africans who were Jews. Everybody
mm-hmm.
else was in caves then. But
mm-hmm.
the Jews who were Africans had formulated a civilization. So
mm-hmm.
the aliens got impressed, so they helped them build the pyramids a quarter of a million years ago while everybody else was suffering through an ice age. And they gave some flying saucer transport to blacks over to America a quarter of a million years ago, a quarter of a million years before the Native Americans got here. And blacks are the Native Americans, for real. So they are the original lost tribe of the Jews. That's what he was talking about. But some white Jews decided to say they didn't like the idea of black folk claiming to be the original Jews. So what they did was, based on what he said on his own time, not on any show they were paying him for, he has said this about Judaism, and they took offense. So technically, he is the victim of a classic Title VII discrimination case. They fired him or threatened him for what he said, exercising his First Amendment rights, relative to a religion he claims to follow. So he got discriminated against based on race and religion, and got a strong case from the sound of it. But he punked out and said, oh, I apologize, and did that little interview with that rabbi who badmouthed Louis Farrakhan, which was a lot worse than what he did, by the way, but that was okay. So I just call that a major league punk out. And I don't have time for them. And about all of the money, I say this. At one time, CBS, which is under Viacom, the same one that threatened him, had four shows in one unit under a guy named Roger King. Roger King's father invented syndication. Roger King was a football player, and he's a real man, big guy. And he inherited the father's business, so he came into TV and stuff laterally. He discovered Oprah after auditioning 350 women. He discovered Dr. Phil, and he brought them to CBS, and CBS gave him Judge Judy and Judge Joe Brown for a special four-unit section of CBS syndication. Well, the last 3 or 4 years that I was with CBS, I beat Oprah every week in the ratings, Phil every week in the ratings. Most of the time, I was either stepping on Judy's heels or beating her, and I didn't play that stuff like this punk out bunch does. But guess what? There was only one man in all of television that got paid more than me, and that was Leslie Moonves, who was CEO of CBS. So that means that black man, straight black man, Judge Joe Brown got paid more than any other man in TV, including the white folk. And I was pushing the right thing, but CBS was not going to let you know that. because they could not, according to their dogma in their agenda, let it be known that a straight black man was the number one man in television. But you see, I didn't punk out like these folk did. So this excuse they give you about the song and dance they got to do in order to keep in Hollywood, in fantasy land, making big money when they could get a regular job is crap. You don't have to. Now, I didn't come into this until after I was in my 50s. They came and got me. I had a successful career doing what I was doing.
Wow.
So it is what it is. So I come particular, and I quit because guess what? I said, I'm tired of this BS. CBS owed me between $28 and $30 million that they had embezzled, and they wanted me to take a damn IOU. I said, go to hell. Unfortunately, the lawyer I had disappeared about 5 years ago. Nobody, including his family or his firm, has seen him since. And there's a long story with that, but that's another tale.
Wow.
And yes, it's hazardous. I was the last judge on the James Earl Ray Martin Luther King matter, and it would have been my conclusion that the FBI supplied the rifle and the ammunition. All that BS you hear through the conspiracy stuff is not true. King did not get smothered. He got his carotid artery on the left severed by a 30 caliber bullet. He wasn't going anywhere to be revived. The shot came from the fire station tower. It was a two-man hit team, and it did not come from the flop house. That's impossible. They show you in the exhibit now why it was impossible, and it didn't come from the bushes. They think it came from the bushes because the sound was deflected as an echo to that point. Nobody went out to research it, but that's another thing. But now, it's dangerous when you start doing the right thing. I was at my home, and it's about 3 o'clock in the morning, and I've become aware that there are three people dressed in black with Kevlar and paramilitary style equipment on, and two in the front. They pry the screens out quietly, take a suction cup with an arm on it and a glass cutter on the end of the arm, cut a circle through one of my window panes, lift the glass out, reach in, open the windows, and I'm thinking, oh hell, this is going to be a real scandal when I do what I'm going to do. Damn. Then I said, wait a minute, I'm a sitting judge and five folk try to break in my, oh, hell, go for it. And I tried to kill them. And I know I hit four of them because there were blood trails, two front, two back. And but I'm not using a .45 anymore because it didn't do too well on their Kevlar. And I had a 9 sitting there and it did better.
Wow.
I guess they had on level 2A. And one of my former clients was the director of police. He personally came out in the morning, and when we checked, there were no reports to any hospital, emergency room, and no police reports for a gun battle that had about 25, 30 shots fired.
Wow.
I had to patch up some walls. See, it's dangerous, but you got to go and do what you got to do. Now, frankly, I had a ball. I was having a thrill. It was better than sex. But that's better. I got that kind of attitude.
Judge,
I mean,
what year was this?
It was about 1996 or 7, somewhere thereabouts.
Oh, my God. In Memphis?
Yes.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Judge Brown, y'all,
that
listen to that voice you hear. If it sounds familiar, that's Judge Brown.
The other time. What's that?
The other.
Oh, yeah.
Did you say the other
time? I won't talk about them. Yeah.
But just you know what? I'm going
to
put it out there, y'all.
That
listen.
Was closer to my, that was during my student days. But anyway, we won't go there.
Go there. Well, listen, we're going to have you come back. Listen, we're going to put it out there tonight, y'all. If you're listening, this is Judge Joe Brown. And we got a late start tonight because we had all types of technical difficulties. So if you tune back in, thank you for tuning back in because we were really struggling to get on the air tonight. But Judge Brown, we were wondering if we could get you to come back maybe once a month for the segment called Here comes the judge.
Hey, no problem. You think no problem.
Oh, I love that. I love
let
that.
Me say something to clarify something. I'll be glad. Let me clarify this. I'm not talking about homosexuals. I'm talking about the LGBT queer type that are talking about a way of life in the poisoning of the family.
Wow.
See, that's like saying all gay folk are LGBTQ. They're not. That's like saying all black folk are Democrats. We are not.
Right.
Some of us are independents. Some are Republicans. But,
mm-hmm.
you know, we vary. So let me just say that. They have an absolute right to do in their bedroom what they want to do. But when you start trying to kick down the door to my front of my house and come in my living room, then I got something to say about it. When you start trying to pass legislation that has something to do with my grandchildren and children and me, I got something to say about it. See,
I agree.
So I will say that.
I agree. Well,
and just
from,
you know,
go ahead, Chris. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was just going to say quickly on that matter, could you kind of maybe just briefly give the dynamics of pretty much how President Obama supported Black Lives Matter, but when you then talk about something that's really polarizing and it's different in terms of man up, because I was, you know, reading on the website about the mentorship. And so,
let me give you.
Yes, sir.
We talk about it later. Let me just give you a little background on Barack Obama that you might know. He grew up as Barry Sotoro. He is the richest man that I've ever sat in the White House. Business Insider reports his net income on his optional draw from his trust fund for 2018 at $570 million after all expenses and income tax, and his gross draw and other income at $1.25 billion. He is one-third beneficiary of a trust fund left by one of the 10 or 15 richest men on earth, his adopted daddy, Lolo Sotoro, who at one time was International Executive Vice President of Standard Oil, who, under their aegis, set up an Indonesian oil company that he exclusively owned. And it is one of the biggest in the world, and Indonesia sits on perhaps the largest oil reserves in the world. He also ran the death squads for the Indonesian government. And he came to my attention somewhere around 1969, 1970, when I was studying comparative international law. Lolo Sotoro was wanted by The Hague for mass murder for allegedly killing between a half million and 750,000 people. So that's Barack Obama's acting daddy who raised him. Barack Obama was born in 1961. Lolo Sotoro adopted him right before 1963. His mother was 18 when she had him. Lolo Sotoro also dealt with George Herbert Walker Bush in the oil business. And when George Herbert Walker Bush became head of the CIA in 1974, guess what? Lolo Sotoro was a contract actor for the CIA in Laos, Vietnam, Cambodia, and Thailand. Remember, this is when the Vietnam thing was winding down, and he had been doing this for the U.S. government for a long time. So daddy was a hyper-rich man, stone-cold killer, and Barack Obama didn't have to sneeze to get a dime. That high school he went through, when he went to it in Hawaii, he had a tuition of $45,000 a year, not including room and board. The current tuition for that high school is about $150,000 a year, not including room and board. That's where he went. I almost sent my oldest son there 20 years ago when it was $95,000 a year, not including room and board. So I know that personally. But I didn't think he was deserving of it, so he didn't go. But you see, that's where he went to high school. And he's always been fooling around with boys. There's a Dr. Short that you may know. He went to undergrad with him, and he recites how Barry Sotoro would have nothing to do with black folk, but he had everything to do with white boys, and he was known as gay. He also will tell you that when he went to divinity school and Obama was at a law school in the building next to where he was going to divinity school to get his doctorate, Obama was 30 years old on law review, and the rest of the people on law review were 22, 23 years old. But now Obama had a problem with keeping his hands off of white boys' crotches and behinds, and he got suspended from law review for 6 weeks. So, like Joan Rivers said before she died, they asked her, when do you think we'll get our first gay in the White House? She said, we already have him. He's in there now. So,
wow.
Does that answer the question?
Yes, sir.
He's a fraud. Oh, by the way, you remember the Gulf blowout with BP? British Petroleum, the Gulf oil rig blowout? Get all that damage down in the Gulf? Okay. 23 people got indicted. Obama pardoned all of them before they went to trial. They were executives or officials for British Petroleum. His trust fund has great large investments in British Petroleum.
Wow. Now that's some information y'all ain't going to get everywhere.
Hey, you know why I don't like it? Because in the 60s when we had BSU activity, Black Panthers and all of that, and in Los Angeles, it got legal. People were getting killed over stuff. We had this kind that benefited from some of the things we did, which were to burn up, blow up, destroy, jack up, not peacefully demonstrate, to get more blacks in UCLA. We did. And we had, when I got in 1965, we had exactly 145 black students. 73 grad students full-time, 72 undergrads full-time, and we had 62,000 students in the school. So we busted our butts, and that included Big Lou, now known as Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, the NBA GOAT. And he and everybody else, athlete and otherwise, we marched, went up and did what we had to do, snatched folk, intimidated people. And we wound up for 66, 67, getting in 250 additional black students, and then for 67, 68, another 250. Well, we made a mistake because that second group included a bunch who were going, I'm sorry, brothers. It's not that I don't appreciate all that you've done getting me in here, but I can't afford to jeopardize my career. You'll have to go on without me, but I'll be there with you in spirit. See, Barack Obama reminds me of these frauds, and one of them in particular, we all said we owed him an ass-whipping until he died, but he died about 10 years ago, and he used to list his activities with the Black Student Union, even though he was scared to go to a damn meeting.
No.
See, so he's a fraud, and I detest and despise that kind of fake black person, fake Negro who wants to sit there and perpetrate at what we used to call pimp the revolution or pimp the movement.
Ooh, yeah.
Wow.
You got a damn thing for your people, but you want to claim that you do when it benefits yourself.
Wow, y'all, listen. As a preacher that I listen to say, we out here now, y'all. We out here.
And I know them because I dealt with them intensively. So when I saw Barry Sotoro, a.k.a. Barack Obama, say that boy is a fraud, then I looked up his voting record. Do you know that the Heritage Foundation, which is a crank bunch of right-wingers who have a think tank, rated him the third most conservative person for 2 years in the U.S. Senate? They gave the leading person a 95. They gave the next man, the number two man, a 94 plus, and they gave him a 94 a little bit smaller plus. That person has never done anything for black folk. And if you want to identify with him, yeah, he's a mulatto, half white folk, half black folk from Africa. And here's the crunch line. It's 2008. Homeboy just got through listening to what was going on at the bar for the election results. He was on the way home when somebody T-boned him at an intersection. He died. His soul gets to heaven. All the black folk through the heavenly grapevine, they gather around him and say, "Brother Soul, you the first one to arrive after this election we heard was going on down there in America. We the black souls up here. We just want to know, is it true that they elected a black man for president?" Yeah. "Well, that being the case, we anxious. Which one of us is his ancestor?" None of them.
We out here now, y'all. We out here now, y'all. Listen, and we out here in the deep. Let's switch gears before they cut us off again. Let's talk about Kanye West, because we only got like 12 minutes left in the show. Tell us about Kanye West,
okay.
And we still want to talk about the presidential election. What do you know about Kanye West?
I don't have any problems with some of the things he said. Okay, let the brother say them. But he seems to have a problem with bipolarity. And the problem with Kanye West is, what if by some stroke of misfortune he won? And he got elected. Let's assume they're having this big official state function in the White House. And all of these ambassadors have come, representatives of other sovereign nations are there. And a whole bunch of them the night before at their hotel have billed $4.95 to their room to see not Kanye, but Ray J shoot come all over the first lady's face. And I'll be behind.
Oh, God.
I'm sorry.
Let me ask you that right quick. Maybe I didn't ask the question right then. did Kanye end this race to basically disrupt the numbers and basically sway the vote for Trump? I mean, is he smart enough to do that? Will he do that?
He might have. Kanye. Wow. What he says isn't so bad. He's just lost his manhood. He jumped into that, so he's become Kanye Kardashian. And that pimp mama house mother, what do they call it? The house madam.
Oh,
she has three floors in that mansion. So her husband decided to convert so he could get up there and get some of that special money on the third floor. That's a Brucey. And the rest of them girls, mama done pimped them out real tough. So they brought in, Kanye to play the piano down on the first floor. You know, they always had a black man play that piano for the whole house. So the madam brought one in, two or three actually.
He's been threatening to tell some stuff. I think there's like a divorce rumors out there about him and Kim. And so I hear that he's threatening to like tell some stuff on the Kardashians. So it's getting ugly.
Well,
but I
what
think
he can tell on them is this. What do they do? How do they become a star? Where do they get their money? You know where they get their money? For the last 19 years, that amateur video that Ray J and Kimmy Girl came up with has been playing at every major hotel and motel in America. You can get it on DirecTV, Dish TV, Comcast, Xfinity, Verizon, AT&T Television for $4.95 a view. And for $7.95 for the more boring, longer one that they came up with as an addition in 2007 of Ray J putting cum all over Kim. That's how the family makes their money.
Lord have mercy.
Selling reviews, reruns of Kimmy giving up butt to Ray J.
Lord have mercy. That, you know what? Let me ask a question that we did not have on the list tonight, but I am just curious, as you were out there in Hollywood and you know how Hollywood works, you know, there are rumors that, you know, you can't get to a certain status unless you join, quote unquote, the Illuminati. Does the Illuminati really exist?
Yeah, it's called the Butt Bangers Association.
Okay.
If you got a dick and you bend over, drop your boxes, and you receive dick, or you got a twat and you spread thighs and you munch twat, yeah. See, they still at that casting couch deep, boy, boy, and girl, girl.
Oh, Lord Jesus. Y'all ain't never heard this guy.
They brag. Look, they brag that 9 out of every 10 people in Hollywood are that way. That's their statement. Now, some of them ain't bad people, I guess. They work hard, but that's their thing.
That's how it gets. So
now,
so
the real Illuminati for real in an influential world, that's Goldman Sachs. And Goldman Sachs finances Obama's trust funds investments. Goldman Sachs, unlike all of the rest of the banking institutions, does not have to cover its accounts with a percentage of real cash on deposit in its own vaults or with the Federal Reserve. If they wrote you a check, you couldn't cash it. But you can deposit it and be given credit for it. So when they mess up, that's where that phrase comes from, too big to fail. The U.S. government just turned the complexities of investment banking over to Goldman Sachs, Smith Barney, et cetera, which is now out of business. And that $700 billion bailout and $781 billion economic incentive plan under Bush and Obama, respectively, were for the benefit of Goldman Sachs. And those, by the way, are the two largest appropriations in the entire history of the United States of America. By the way, Bush and Obama. They did a release on the DNA of these folk. And do you know that, in fact, the Bushes and the Sotoros were old family friends? And this thing where you see George W. give candy to Michelle at these functions, the punchline is that's what George W. used to give Barack when he was Barry, when he was 8 years old. Now, there is one bad individual. I have to give it to this guy. He must have done something. His name is Samuel Hinckley. Now, get this. They did the genetics from the DNA test. Do you know that George Herbert Walker Bush and George Walker Bush, that's dad and son, cousins, Barack Obama? And do you know that Dick Cheney is a cousin of Barack Obama in the Bushes? That Warren Buffett, the billionaire, is a cousin of the bunch? Brad Pitt, the actor, is the cousin, and this guy, Samuel Hinckley. I don't know what this dude was eating for breakfast, but he died in 1662 in Cape Cod. He can claim 7 U.S. presidents as direct descendants and 1 U.S. vice president.
Wow. Judge, we got 4
that
minutes
dude
left.
Was not playing blanks. What?
We got 4 minutes left in the show, and I think Christopher's got the final question for you.
Yes, just Ron, the question that I have is related to, well, Man Up, but also like the Black Economic Blueprint, and I was reading some of the stuff on Man Up about the mentorship, about the skills, and how that's invariably different from Black Lives Matter because it has nothing to do with sexuality, it has to do about economics. Can you talk a little bit about also, like in a lot of the schools, inner city schools where they used to have the trades and so forth, because everybody's not going to go to college, and how that disparity and how they've taken those trades out of school.
Okay, let me tell you about that. Be careful
what
you ask for. You just might get it. I can grow radishes, do leather work, metal work, electric work. I can cast steel. I can do woodwork, do cabinet making. Because when I went to junior high school, They expected black people to work with their hands, and they tried to discourage us from going to college. I had to fight that. But it's helpful, and let me say this. The key to success in life is kicking butt between kindergarten and the 12th grade. If you do all right, then you will open all the rest of the doors in your life. You may have to kick them all the way in, but they will be unlocked. So point, you can't get anything half-stepping. There are no easy ways to doing it. It's hard work. And I know some real billionaires, and there's some hard-working people, at least the ones that earn it, not the ones that got the trust fund. That's another matter. But get yourself together. Prepare yourself to get into science, technology, engineering, and math, because the key to economic success is to have another dot-com revolution based on something black folk invented. So there is a wide open marketplace that's not dominated by old deep pockets that you can't compete with. So let's not worry about subsistence farming moving back to Africa. Let's understand that everybody in the world wants to get here to take advantage of the opportunities. We just have to prepare ourselves, start getting into economics, start getting in. Not we got enough damn lawyers. They need backbone. We need more economists. We need more who have MBAs. We need more people who are scientists, who deal with engineering, who can manage technology, and who know math. That's what we need. And if you want to do something to get rich, that's what you need to get into.
Wow. Listen, y'all. Listen. That 120 minutes went fast, especially when we lost 30 minutes of it. But we thank you all for listening, hanging in there with us tonight. We didn't know we were going to make it. We were praying the whole time. Joe Brown, thank you so much for coming on with us tonight. We enjoyed our time with you, and we look forward to you coming back on a monthly basis, talking with us on a segment.
Wow.
We're going to find out. Say what?
Can I leave you with a short word?
Yes, you can.
You are not a man unless you take care of your responsibilities. Do so. Be proud of it. Take joy in your accomplishments in terms of handling what you were supposed to be doing.
Yes, listen, we receive that. We receive that. Listen, y'all, thank you for taking a ride with us tonight. We will be back next week, same time, same bat channel. Good night. Bye-bye.
All right. My pleasure.
Hear ye, hear ye. The court's in session. The court's in session. Now here come the judge. Here come the judge.
Here come the judge.